Hey, Renter Retires, it's Adam Schrader here with another episode, and I am joined today by Tom Dunkel. He is the Chief Investment Officer for Belrose Storage Group, and we're going to talk about, well, if you can't guess by the name of his company, we're going to talk about self-storage. Tom, thanks for joining us today.
Great being with you, Adam. Looking forward to our talk today.
Yeah, so we always like to start just learning about why you got into real estate, and then we love to hear about your first deal. What did you do for your first deal?
Oh, man, you're going to bring up that old battle scar. That's fine. Yeah, so, again, I'm Tom Dunkel, Chief Investment Officer at Belrose Storage Group. I was in corporate America for a number of years after finishing business school. I was doing mergers and acquisitions and corporate finance work in the aerospace industry and third-party logistics and software and telecom and some of that stuff. And ultimately, was forced out of corporate America when I got fired in 2006, which was just the kick in the pants that I needed, Adam, to actually go out and start my entrepreneurial career, which was something that I really wanted to do all along anyway. But, you know, sometimes it's hard to figure out how you kind of gracefully make that exit. So mine was very ungraceful. But, I embraced the opportunity and I jumped into real estate. And so the first deal that I did back in 2006.
Exciting.
Yeah, right. I was trying to do like a fix and flip deal in Philadelphia. And I bought this property that had been like vacant for a long time. There's literally holes in the roof, you know, rainwater pouring in throughout the house. Just, I mean, it was trashed, right? And, but, you know, in my way of thinking, like, I didn't even know back then, like, you know, you could buy a house for, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 or something. So, you know, I was running my numbers as a numbers guy, right? I'm a spreadsheet nerd by training. And, you know, I ran my numbers and I came up with a price of like $43,000, which was probably, you know, at least $20,000 too much. And, you know, fast forward, you know, I ended up losing money on that deal, and but it was a great learning experience, that's for sure.
So after that, why did you continue in real estate?
You know, Adam, I was just determined to get after it and build my own business and do my own thing. And you know, as you alluded to earlier, you know, the 2006 wasn't the best timing there. So I definitely learned some hard lessons those first few years, but I was determined to, you know, to stick it out and make it work. So made a lot of mistakes. I failed in putting a good team together. I didn't really focus enough on getting good quality people. I was just trying to get people, anybody to fill certain seats to help me grow the business. And of course, that didn't work out. And then, of course, you know, trying to do real estate or wholesaling, you know, flipping contracts or whatever in a super competitive market like Philadelphia. I mean, that was another hard lesson. It was just so competitive. And here I am spending, I think I was spending at one point about $20,000 a month on marketing. And that, so of course that money was just, you know, burning up. And so, you know, learning those hard lessons early. But yeah, here I am, you know, 17 years later, and I'm still at it. So
So before we dive into self-storage, tell us a happy story about one of your single family investments.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there are certainly plenty of good stories. I would say, let's see, you know, when someone's in a distressed situation and they're selling their property, you know, at a deep discount, I mean, there's usually something going on with them. So definitely had a few situations where like a family was in a really tough spot. So I was able to come along, you know, get them the money that they needed to get out of from underneath that burden of owning that house. And so that always felt good. And then to be able to take that property and fix it up and sell it to a new family or new owner that was going to, you know, maybe raise their kids there and stuff like that. I mean, that was always very fulfilling as a fix and flipper back then.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're solving problems as a real estate investor, both for the people selling and the people, you know, looking for a place to live, whether it's renting or, you know, owner occupied. I love that. So
that's right.
When did you make the switch? When did you, and well, was it straight from single family to self storage, or was there stops along the way? Where did you go?
Oh yeah, there were plenty of diversions along the way, but so got out of doing this the single family stuff when I found distressed mortgage notes. So I started buying distressed mortgage notes in 2009. Then 2010, I connected with my partner Joe Downs. We're still partners today, 13 years later. So we've built up a nice business in the distressed mortgage debt space called U.S. Mortgage Resolution. That business is still thriving today. Thankfully, we've done over $53 million of revenue in that business over the years. And so what that's allowed us to do is to get into some other areas. So so the good thing about distressed debt is it can be very profitable. Bad thing is it's really hard, especially like for a business school guy like me, to like put a business plan together, because really we're at the whim of the banks, you know, when they want to sell loans and that sort of thing. So it was difficult for us to really have any kind of predictability in that business. So we were searching that out, right? We wanted to find a business that was a lot more predictable, a lot more steady in the ups and downs and that kind of thing. So we started a hard money lending business. And we failed at that. So we decided to start another hard money lending business. So we failed at that twice. And then we got into a title company. We were partners in a title company, and that didn't quite work out. But about 2018, we started hearing more and more about self-storage. 2019, we started going to the conferences, getting educated. We joined the mastermind group. And through that process, we realized that, you know, Joe and I have some great skills, but we were lacking a couple of very important ones. One was finding off-market deals. We didn't really have that skill set between us. And the other one was, you know, once you buy these things, now you got to run them, right? You got to operate them. So we didn't have that operating experience. So through our mastermind network, we were able to fill both of those very important roles. And so it wasn't until we filled those roles and solidified our business plan and got the team together that we bought our first facility 3 years ago this month, actually, in August of 2020. So fast forward, I'm happy to announce that last week we closed on our 14th acquisition. We've now acquired over $41 million worth of self-storage properties across seven states, over 700,000 square feet, and over 4,000 units. Storage units. So we've come quite a long way from just a couple guys and a computer. Now we got a great team and we're rocking and rolling pretty good.
I want to talk a little bit. You mentioned, we're going to get into self-storage, I promise, but you mentioned you had issues with the mortgage notes. You had issues with the hard money lending, and you kept going, and then you succeeded in self-storage. So what changed? Was it just the mastermind group that helped you be successful, or did you figure out something about running the business? What changed?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. Well, you can probably see the book over my shoulder here, Who Not How. So, you know, as entrepreneurs, right, we're just, it's in our DNA to just try to smash through walls and just figure stuff out on our own. But having been an entrepreneur now for many years, I was kind of tired of doing that.
And eventually walls hurt.
That's right. So I started to just get, I guess, a little wiser, as I'm getting a little, you know, a few more gray hairs. And, you know, we wanted to be very intentional about what we were doing. And like I said earlier, we had trouble doing that in distressed mortgage debt just because it's such an unpredictable, asset class. And that's one of the things that we really loved about self-storage is it's a very steady asset class for the last 40 years. You know, vacancy or occupancy rather in self-storage facilities has gently meandered between 80 and 90% across the country. Meanwhile, you know, the economy is bouncing up and down, expansions and busts and everywhere in between. So we really like that about self-storage. It's also becoming a more and more popular asset class. So we really like that as well. And so when we saw these stars starting to align for us, we said, hey, you know, let's be really intentional about how we go into this business. Let's get educated. Let's get the team together. Let's come up with our acquisition criteria and stick to it. And then we can you know, more confidently enter the marketplace as a viable acquirer of self-storage facilities.
So does self-storage, is it really distressed properties? Is it just distressed owners? Or what's the typical deal that you're looking at there?
Yeah, so we're a what I call a value add shop, Adam. We're acquiring existing facilities primarily. We do have some expansion, some development things in the pipeline, but in our what I'll call our initial phase here, the first few years, we've been a value add shop. We've been acquiring existing facilities mostly for moms and pops, and these are moms and pops that they're not super business savvy. They're not, they're not members of the mastermind group. They're not going to the industry conferences. You know, they're not learning about the new technologies and software and things that can help them run their business better and more profitably. They're not leveraging technology to do marketing and those kinds of things. So they leave a lot of opportunity for us to come in with our professional team and turn that facility around. Increase in that operating income, which in commercial real estate is the ticket you need to increase the value of the facility.
Yeah. So how are you finding these people? I mean, obviously, you know, when you were doing flips, you know, there's foreclosures, there's all of those things. When you're doing notes, you can go to the banks. So how do you start finding these deals? Like, let's say I really think this is interesting. How, you know, what do I do? Just go knocking on a bunch of doors and say, hey, do you want to get out of here? And first off, well, there's never anybody actually in the office. There's like one person. So how do you find these?
Yeah, good question. But I wouldn't knock that last strategy. I'll get to that in a second. But we have a whole team, Adam. And so we have offshore virtual assistants who are reaching out and contacting facilities. They're doing research for us on different markets because we have different kind of criteria and markers that we look for when we're entering into a new market. We have an acquisitions manager, and then my partner Joe. That's his area of accountability, and our company is acquisitions. So Joe, Jack, Kendi. You know, we've got probably five people that are out there. You know, looking for deals, and. What we found recently, Adam, because of course, you know, self-storage has been a pretty popular asset class the last few years. As our people are reaching out to these owners, they're kind of blowing us off saying, well, you know, I got your letter and it's on the top of the stack of, you know, the other 50 letters that I got. You know, my voicemail is full of, you know, 20 voicemail messages from guys just like you, you know, looking to buy our facility. You know, why should I do business with you? Blah, blah, blah. So, my partner, Joe, who's not afraid to, you know, get knee to knee with somebody and have a conversation, he arranged to do a road trip down. We were targeting North Carolina at the time. And he arranged a handful of meetings with owners. And then he did another about 10 stop bys where he did. You're right. Most of the time, the owner is not there in the office. Sometimes they are there. At least, you know, someone can take Joe's card and hand it along. But out of his road trip, that first one, he had four really solid leads, which was great. And so we ended up closing on one of those. And then because of that success, he went and did it again. So that was just recently. So now we're just trying to work through that process. But yeah, it's challenging out there. It's competitive. So that's why we had to kind of go that extra mile and actually send Joe down to North Carolina to knock on those doors.
So you talk about vetting out markets. Is it similar to looking at like the single family markets that you were in? Like, are you looking at, are landlord friendly for single family areas usually landlord friendly for storage units, or is pretty much everywhere landlord friendly for storage units? And I don't even know if you call it landlord friendly when it's a storage unit. But how do you figure that part out?
Yeah, I would say that's one of the big differences, Adam, between self-storage and any other what I call habitational kind of real estate. So whether it's single families or, you know, duplexes, triplexes, multifamily, what have you, you're in landlord-tenant world. And in certain parts of the country, right, the court system is very, very heavily favored in favor of the tenant. And, you know, landlord, you know, kind of gets beat up. Well, in self-storage world, we're not in landlord-tenant. We are in what's called lien law. And so our laws are very specific and they're very clear. At day 61, if someone hasn't paid, they get a notice. And 10 days later, their stuff goes up for auction on a website. And
Storage Wars.
Yeah, that's right. And the beautiful thing for us is the winner of that auction, you know, we get those proceeds. They are responsible within 72 hours to come and clean out that self-storage unit. And so it gives us the ability, you know, if they come in the morning, we can have that swept out and ready to rent and probably even rented by the end of that day. So we have the laws in our favor, and our turnaround times are super quick. Having owned rental properties myself, I knew that was always a big problem when I had a tenant move out, right? You got to, you know, paint and carpet and fix this and fix that. You know, hopefully you can get a new tenant in there within a couple months, but it can drag out for a little while in my experience. So we don't have that same issue in self-storage, which is a big advantage.
Now, are you outsourcing this to companies to do the auction, or do you have to run it, or how does that part work?
Yeah, so our managers, one of the things that they're tasked with is handling these things, but these websites are very streamlined these days. They make it very easy. All you have to do is post as many pictures as you want, but you know, usually in a storage unit that's full of stuff, you know, you're only going to get a handful of decent photos. And then there are people out there that are just okay, you know, buying this stuff, and then they I guess go to their flea markets or whatever to liquidate,
the hard
monetize that's the stuff that they buy, and then they're, you know, kind of off doing their own thing. So it's very streamlined and very easy for us to get those units taken care of.
So what are the things that y'all look for in the actual self-storage facility that say, yes, we can value add? Because it seems like you've got doors, you've got concrete, you've got locks. Well, I guess you're probably making your tenant bring the locks. Is it just strictly, are they marketing well? Or is it, you know, they're under rents, or what are you looking for?
That's right. Yeah, no, you're spot on. It's we're looking for their rents. A lot of times, especially here post COVID, right? Like during COVID, self-storage was so popular that it wasn't unusual in our portfolio to see rates going up like 15 or 20% in a year. So if you're a mom and pop owner and you're kind of asleep at the wheel, or you're just kind of doing things the way you've always done it, you know, fast forward a couple years, your rates are going to be 30% or more below market. And so we run into that a lot, where rents are at least 20, maybe 30. You know, we've seen rents on some unit sizes being like 50% below where some of their competitors are. And it's just a fact that these owners are comfortable with the amount of money that's coming in each month. And this is their words, what they tell us. They say, "Oh, I know I could probably push rents, but you know, I know all my customers. I don't want to, you know, tick them off, and I'm happy with the amount of money that's coming in each month, so I'm not going to rock the boat," kind of thing. So that's a big one. And then the other thing too, Adam, is a lot of these folks, they don't have a website, or if they do, it hasn't been updated in the last 3, 4, 5 years, and they're certainly not able to take any new. They're not able to rent a unit through their website or take a payment or that kind of thing, where our software platform allows for all those kinds of things, including search engine optimization, so we show up higher on the Google searches. When we do our due diligence on a facility, we Google their name. If it's like back on like page 3 or 4 of Google, you know we have an opportunity there to increase the visibility online for that facility and get more units rented and add value.
So you mentioned earlier that it's all about net operating income, cap rates, those kind of things. Now, if you're looking at a market, is the cap rate on self-storage similar to that of multifamily, or is it completely different? How do you evaluate that?
No, you're spot on. The cap rates are generally in the ballpark of multifamily. They're probably a little bit higher in our experience in the same kind of market. But that's, we look at the cap rate more in our exit assumptions than our going in assumptions. Cause as we've discussed, these moms and pops, they're not really running it like a business. So they kind of take their eye off the profit and loss statement And so we've run into some facilities where, you know, they're not really running any expenses through the facility. But then we've run into others where they're running a lot of expenses through the facility, you know, overpaying their, you know, sister-in-law or whatever to run the facility. So a lot of times we need to normalize those numbers. So the what I'm getting at is the what we call the going in cap rate is not something we pay a whole heck of a lot of attention to, but we do look at the market cap rate for when we're making our exit assumptions and our projections.
So when you're looking at these things and you see, okay, you know, Adam's storage facility is 40% undervalued, what's a realistic timeline of getting it up to market value? Like, can you just raise it 40% and keep people, or is it, you know, maybe 10% a year? Or what's a reasonable assumption for rent increases on storage facilities and still keeping your people, right, not tenants?
Right, right. Yeah, no, that's a great question, Adam, because it's something that we have kept our eye on, and it's been very, very dynamic recently. So during COVID, when people were in a pinch and they had to change their spare bedroom into their home office, and they were having to store all their stuff, and then there's all kinds of other commotion, which generally drives demand for self-storage, we were pretty aggressive with our rate hikes during that time, and so we could push pretty aggressively. So I think one facility off the top of my head, I think we raised the rates maybe 20-25% over the course of 1 year, and maybe even 30%. But that's changed now. So we're post COVID world, and now we're more in the kind of 7-10% per year range. So even though the facility that we acquired just last week, their rents are 40% below market, we're giving ourselves 2, maybe even 3 years to push up to that level.
Okay. And so as you're leaving this, how are you running it? Is it just like, are you trying to run everything virtually and through the website? Are you having to, you know, fire the sister-in-law and find employees somewhere? Or kind of how is that world workers? I'm assuming it's a sure. mix of some sort.
Exactly. Yeah. In fact, that's exactly what we call it. We call it a hybrid management structure. So we have a human that's assigned.
Taking business cards for buyers for you?
That's right. We have a human who's assigned to each facility, but they're only going to be boots on the ground probably less than a week per month at that particular facility, because the rest of the time they can literally handle any customer inquiries or that sort of thing. Just from their smartphone, right? So they have our management software app on their phone. So as calls or emails or inquiries come in, they're able to handle those on their cell phone from wherever on the planet they happen to be at that point in time. They can take payments, they can adjust things, they can rent additional units and all those kinds of things. So we are able to have, instead of having one manager on one facility, we can have one manager on 3, 4, 5 facilities, which of course helps to drive down our expenses, drive up our net operating income, and therefore increase the value of the facility.
When you have you call them tenants, or what do you call the people who are renting?
Yeah, we call them customers or tenants. Customers. Yeah, either way.
Yeah. What are the downfalls? Like you mentioned in, you know, a single family, you can have someone who trashes your house. Is it mostly just worried about customers like banging up doors, or what are the kind of pitfalls that require maintenance in a facility, in a, you know, self-storage facility?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, we certainly run into that. We're not immune in self-storage from, you know, weird and troublesome tenant issues. You know, a lot of times someone will rent a unit who they're moving, right? So they're renting a U-Haul truck. Well, they're not truck drivers by training, right? So they might run into the side of a building, or they might run back into a door and damage it so it doesn't work. They might back into the fence. They might, you know, they could damage the gate. Yeah, so there's certainly all of those sorts of things happen. They do. And this is kind of an extreme example, but it's actually going on right now as we speak. We have a a tenant who's suing us because there was a leak in the roof, and some stuff got wet, and they claimed like it was this very, very valuable stuff. And meanwhile, it's all BS. However, we still have to go through on our end that we have to go through the process the right way. So we have to get our insurance company involved and our attorney involved. And so this is an extreme example. Frankly, this is the first time that we've ever run into anything like this. But, you know, you're going to have a disgruntled, you know, tenant who maybe pushes things a little too far. But our to protect us, we actually have something in our lease agreement, which she's ignoring. But it says that you can't have your contents can't be worth more than $5,000. And she's saying it was worth $50,000. So we've got that protection in there. But you still have to go through all the headache of it all. So it's unfortunate, but it's still a business and you're dealing with people. And sometimes that can be a challenge.
Yeah. Well, at least it didn't ruin a Monet that was in there, right? Didn't have to do that. Earlier, right. You know, you talked about acquiring these things and getting them from moms and pops, but you also talked about how there's more money coming into it, more investors coming in and doing this. How long do you think there is before, you know, the investors have taken over, and at that point it's streamlined and you're having to, you know, well, I don't even know at that point if you're just buying on cap rate and hoping that things go up, or, you know, where is it in that stage, and how long do you think it has in runway?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I've got a kind of a multi-pronged answer there, but I guess first and foremost, just to give folks out there just a sense of the self-storage industry, right? So there's about 55,000 self-storage facilities across the United States. The big guys who you've heard of, Public Storage, Extra Space, CubeSmart, et cetera, they only control about 30% of that market. So call it 70% of the market, or, you know, rough math, 30 some thousand facilities are either kind of second tier, kind of like our company, or below that is, you know, are the moms and pops. So at least half of the world out there in storage is still moms and pops that are onesie twosie owners of these existing self-storage facilities out there. And by the way, the development, well, I'll get to that in a second. So you couple that with the fact that storage is becoming more and more popular. A few years back, it was only about 8% of households in the country were using storage. Today, it's going on 11% of households in the country using storage. I know a 3% move doesn't sound like a lot, but when you consider 120 million households in the country, every 1% move means 1.2 million new self-storage customers. So, you know, here we've got now 3 million new self-storage customers over the past few years, and the development pace is not keeping up with that. Very similar to the problem in single-family homes, right, in the you know, that kind of habitational real estate. It's just not keeping up with the growth of the population. So we feel like storage is still in the early innings. I think people are now, you know, coming around to using self-storage more and more as part of their overall housing strategy. They're not just buying, you know, a house and stuff in the attic and the basement, especially the millennials, right? Millennials are the biggest generation in our society right now. And they are using storage as kind of a strategic add on to their overall housing strategy. So we see storage as having a lot of runway out in front of it.
Okay. And so how do you know if a place is oversaturated with, well, first off, are there areas that are oversaturated? And then how do you know if, you know, if you're going in and looking and evaluating the market, it might be a great market for it, but you know, maybe there are too many. Are there markets that have too many? And how do you know whether or not you're getting into a bad, you know, what looks like a good deal, but in a bad place?
Sure. Yeah. That's a great question. And that's part of, you know, like when we touched on earlier in the conversation about the acquisition team that we have, you know, it's multiple people. And that's one of the things that they look at is we're not only looking at the facility when we acquire, we're looking at the market and what's the competition look like and what do the rates look like and what do the rate trends look like? Are the rates, are they trending up? Are they trending down? Are there new developments of new self-storage facilities coming into that market? So we're looking at all those things. And one of the things we are able to look at is called a supply index, which is just a fancy way of saying, hey, there's this many square feet of self-storage in that market, and there's this many people. We do that division, we do that math, and we say, okay, so there's 7 square feet of self-storage per person in that market. And then is that good or bad? It gives us a little bit of an insight because there, every market has a little different equilibrium point because some areas of the country use storage more than others. But that gives us sort of a little hint going in. But ultimately, Adam, it's us, it's our acquisition team getting on the phone and calling the competitive facilities in that market and asking them, hey, how's your occupancy? You know, what are your rates like? What are your rate trends like? And so if there's, you know, 10 or 12 square feet of storage available per capita, if they're all full and their rates keep going up, we know that that market has some high demand for self-storage space. So that will give us the confidence to go into that market. If there's a big development coming in, a big new, you know, 5-story, you know, 200,000 square foot self-storage facility coming in, you know, that's going to be a big red flag for us. And we'll probably, you know, not look to go into that market because we're, you know, those big guys that go in there, they can slash their rents, and which is what they do. They slash their rents below market to fill up that 200,000 square feet, and they just suck the demand right out of that, out of that market. So we definitely try to steer clear of that.
All right. Well, Tom, thank you so much for joining us today. The website is BelroseStorageGroup.com. That's BelroseStorageGroup.com. Tell us a little bit about your company. Obviously, we know it involves storage here, but tell us a little bit about your company, what you do, and who you're looking to help.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, this has been great, Adam. Yeah, so again, I'm Tom Dunkel. I'm a chief investment officer here at Belrose Storage Group. And we're in the business of helping investors out there, you know, reach their financial and their wealth building goals. We've been raising private money from investors now for over 13 years. And yeah, we just really enjoy being able to provide these great investment opportunities for our investors out there. And we invest right alongside. So, you know, we've been putting up our own money in deals all along, and we just really like this industry. It's very predictable, but that's basically what we're doing here, Adam. We're putting investor groups together to go and acquire these self-storage facilities, and we turn them around and increase the value and generate great returns for our investors.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Again, the website is BelroseStorageGroup.com. If you're looking for single family instead of storage, or, you know, hey, your tenants might, they're probably going to need storage anyway, head on over to Rent to Retirement and you can see the single family and multifamily properties we have available there. And I know we keep getting requests for it. It's getting towards the end of 2023, but these markets will probably still be good in 2024. If you want a copy of Zach's top 20 markets to invest in 2023, go ahead and email podcast@renttoretirement.com. That's podcast@renttoretirement.com. Really appreciate the time you spent educating yourself today, and we'll talk to you on the next episode.